Moncrief on News Talk.
And I'm joined, as Sean is, every Wednesday by Joanna Fortune. Joanna, you're welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
This is a long email and someone is at their wit's end, but let me bring it to you quickly. Hi, Joanna. I'm writing as I'm concerned about my five-year-old son who is about to start primary school next week. He's been struggling with chronic constipation since he was a baby. He's been taking pediatric laxatives on and off since he was 1 year old, the poor fella. In the last year, he's been increasingly soiling his underpants and had a lot of accidents. We went to the doctor and we were put in touch with an incontinence nurse who was great. She explained how the connection between his brain and his bowel has become disrupted due to the fact that he was withholding poos for so long. Now, this is a very, very long email. So there are a lot of problems, but I'm just going to go towards the end of it. I've tried star charts for toilet sits. I've tried social stories. I've explained everyone must poo and that he can't stop the poo, but he can't stop going in his underpants. I've explained it will not be nice for other kids if they smell his poo. I've explained to him that the teacher will not wipe his bottom when he's in big school. I no longer know the correct thing to say to him. Sorry for the long email. And the email was a lot longer. That is from Barbara. She is really looking for some help. And it sounds like she has tried all sorts of things.
Yeah, and you're right. The full email goes through details. Yeah. And, you know, this is going on for most of this little guy's life since he was 1 year old. And so when we look at this, for anyone who'd be like, oh, why is that happening? There's a condition called encopresis. Mm-hmm. So you often hear about enuresis, which is wetting, but encopresis is the soiling side of that. And it's when a child, now to get a diagnosis of encopresis, the child has to be over four, because you'd always give them time to get potty trained and to gain control. But a child over four who has been toilet trained accidentally is leaking poop or is pooing into their clothes. Constipation is a key cause of that, as is fear or anxiety of going to the toilet. And of course, then it's a bit of chicken and egg, because did the constipation come first or the fear of going to the toilet? Because if you're constipated, you can also become anxious about going to the toilet. So there's huge emotional charge around this. And this is one that comes up even when young kids are starting preschool or big school. Yeah. Things that as a parent at home, when there's toileting struggles, you can almost manage. Suddenly you're like, it has to be fine now because they're going out into the world, into school, and it won't be okay there. So our stress and anxiety as parents goes up around this as well.
Can I just unpack that slightly? Yeah. Are you saying then, because you mentioned that condition, and I don't want to speak clumsily here, but is this entirely psychosomatic or entirely biological? Or a strange mix of both?
Well, it can be a mix of both. I mean, encopresis is a very real condition. Yeah. And, you know, it can come from a fear, anxiety, but it also can come from constipation where the child has no control over that at all. And either way, even if you have a child who is presenting with that condition and it's coming from a more psychosomatic or a fear-based place, it's still a very real symptom. Mm. And you have to treat the symptom as well as exploring the underlying cause. Okay. And that's what this parent has been doing. Yeah. Now, one of the things that comes up in the longer letter is trying lots of things.
Yeah.
And they have tried everything from incontinence nurse appointments to OT consultation to, as you mentioned, things like star charts and all of that.
And laxatives,
exactly. Now, consistency is key.
Okay.
And that's one of the things in this letter this parent does acknowledge, partly because you have a five-year-old and you have two smaller children as well. It's very hard to be consistent over a period of 4 years when it feels like nothing is working. You can get despondent and give up yourself. Of course you can. But now it's like, uh-oh, this has to be done for school. So a couple of things that I would look at. First of all, I would go back to the incontinence nurse.
Okay.
I would be going back, even if you only saw her 6 months ago or what, I would go back and say, look, we're not seeing a sustained improvement, if any improvement at all. This is still an ongoing issue. We're now going to have to be working with the school on it as well. This is getting bigger than something we can contain within our family. So go back there and do that. There is somebody actually, John, online who is a registered nurse who also posts a lot of content on Instagram around this and does consultations. Anne Costigan, who, you know, would know a lot about this, just in case there's any other parent who's like, oh, I've never heard of an incontinence nurse. I need one of those. That she's online as Poo and the Loo. so quite easy to find.
Yes.
But it's worth, if this is something that anyone else is struggling with, because this is more common than you would think it is, actually, go back to the incontinence nurse. Go back to basics. Consistency is key. Don't throw loads of things at once, but go back. You're really looking at retraining. Retraining to get regular toilet habits. That's key to success here. They have done all the right things. As I said, it's about going back and doing it calmly and consistently.
Yeah.
Talk to the school. I'm sure you have, but if you haven't, talk to the school proactively.
And I'm assuming in the modern day and right on schools, and I mean that in a nice way, but they're going to be sympathetic to this. I mean, it's not the kid. No, you're
I mean,
I'm shooting in the dark there, but it's not the kid's
fault.
No, you're not.
Of course not. Yeah. And nobody would think that this isn't a child who's willfully sitting and doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, if you're trying to settle 24, perhaps plus, little 4 or 5 year olds into school, and they all have their little hiccups and issues, it is going to be challenging for a teacher to manage this every single day if it's a daily issue.
Yeah.
What you would be is talking to the school about it, asking for open bathroom access so he doesn't really need to ask or interrupt the teacher.
Yeah.
Because if this child feels an urge to go, he won't be able to wait.
Yeah.
So he needs to know that. And I would probably place a hygiene pack in the bathroom for him.
Okay.
Clean underpants, a wipe, a wet wipe if he's struggling to wipe himself with tissue. Just, and again, communication with the teacher. And that's delivered with kindness. So the teacher saying, look, I understand. Yeah. And this is where your pack is. And if you need anything else, you let me know. From a play point of view, and I do think there's a lot that you can do with play around this as well, is sensory play.
Okay.
Sensory, tactile, touch-based, messy play. I think sand, water, bubbles, Play-Doh, any slime, anything that's going to get him really exposed to and used to textures. And and what I like to do when I'm working with kids like this is I dampen the sand, and using a funnel, I fill a deflated balloon, the bulb of the balloon, with sand, and just have them squeeze the sand out onto a tray. So they're getting that play-based sensory piece about squeeze and release, which is helping them understand that bodily instinct, which he's struggling with at the moment as well. But I would be...
So literally putting it into your hands in a way, mimicking the bell movement.
Exactly that. Wow. Exactly that. Okay. And just letting him get really messy and tactile with the play, because it's often a sensory experience that's causing the fear and anxiety around it. But I cannot emphasize enough, I'd go back to your doctor, I'd go back to your incontinence nurse with this.
That seems to be key. Isn't it a strange thing of adult life that school and the start of it brings so many things
it does.
To a head.
This is the season. This is when all of little worries suddenly bubble up and become really big worries about that charge of getting back to school and that transition.
Indeed. I should mention, I did use the phrase kids there. My wife says they're not goats. Don't call them
children.
Kids. I do mean it as a term of endearment. To me, kid is lovely. But just to clarify that. Anyway, Barbara, I do hope that's help, and may the road rise to you. Now, something less troubling, but maybe not. My kids won't stop squabbling. My two sons, age 9, almost 10 and 12, are fighting constantly since the summer holidays began. Ah, yes. They usually get on well and used to only fight very rarely. But these days, they squabble all the time about everything. The TV, who gets to watch what? Shared pals, old chestnut. Mm. Activities, chores, video games. Sometimes the older one makes it physical, which we don't tolerate at all. But they both say mean things that hurt the other's feelings. I've tried punishing them by limiting their screen time, computer games, and separating them, but it doesn't deter them. Sometimes they listen to dad more times than me when he tries to calm them down, but only for a short time. Any advice? I'm at my wit's end. We're heading to a remote spot in Kerry for the last 2 weeks in August, and I'm worried that it will just get worse. And they signed that message in capital letters, help.
I think that's the anticipation, isn't it, that we're going to be isolated, where they may not have those computer games and all of the distractions that are already causing the problems. But just to put this in a kind of developmental context, 10 and 12 year olds are within developmental swing of each other, but they're also separate, if you know what I mean. So they're mired by this developmental chasm that spreads between them. So they're kind of nipping on each other's heels. They're into to the same things. They're even hanging out with the same friends. But you've got a 12-year-old who's entering early adolescence. So you're getting moodiness. You're getting the pushing others, the physicality of that. That's all to be expected. Of course, corrected as well, but it is to be expected. Then you've a 10-year-old who's slap bang in middle childhood stage of development with a pronounced sense of justice and fairness, particularly as it applies to them, who has done what to me, not what I've done to someone else. It's not fair. He gets, that's mine, it's my turn. You're going to get a lot of that from the 10-year-old as well. So when you think about, they're both developing exactly like you'd expect them to be, but when you then put them together, it's going to result in conflict over space, conflict over respect. Whether or not they do or don't is going to be there, and attention or just in general conflict you're going to get with them. They're also playing computer games, depends on the games they're playing and what kind of high adrenaline or exciting conflict oriented kind of play they're doing there. Just keep an eye on that as well with what they're watching or engaged in. The key though for this parent, because it's easy for me to say, well, look, two boys this age, that's developmental. When you're trying to parent through this, it's very difficult, but you have to avoid getting pulled into the role of referee, because as a parent, you can only lose. You will lose that all the time, because whoever, whatever you say, the other one is going to say you always take his side. Even when you're like, well, no, it's 50-50. I definitely rotate whose side I'm taking. They perceive it very, very differently. Intervene only to name what's happening. This is too loud. That's not okay. You're not allowed to hit your brother. Whatever it is, to name what's happening and to separate them.
Okay.
That's what you're going to do. You're not getting into kind of saying, who said what? Now you tell me your side, and you not while the fight is happening.
So you're only calling out the behaviours which are upsetting the rest of the house, and you're not getting, what you said, mired in developmental chasms. Yeah. You're not getting mired in that then.
No, because if you get pulled into that, you're trying to reason with unreasonable people.
Okay.
And you will drive yourself nuts.
I'm looking at you like you're in my house. But anyway, let's get back to this. Remind ourselves we're on the radio.
I do think what they need is one-to-one time as well. Because
with the parents.
Yes, because what you've got is two boys who are, you know, developmental swing of each other. That two-year gap, two-year age gap is prime for sibling rivalry and tensions. Because they're always like, I want to be doing it. No, I'm older than him. You'll always get that bubbling up. Get a bit of one-to-one time with each of them. And that doesn't have to be mum with each of them always. Mum, dad, rotate it between you. And honour that time. Like if you make a plan for it, make sure it happens. Going to Kerry is actually a great opportunity for this, because you can get out and do something with one of them, do it with the other one, go for a cafe or a walk or a swim or a bike, whatever it is.
Presumably the four of them together at times as well needs to be.
But you could do that over something quite structured as well.
Yeah.
Like going to remote part of Kerry, which is a choice, by the way, that's a choice you've made. Yeah. Bring some board games.
Okay.
And like, I know you think, oh my God, they're not going to do board games. They like gaming. Board games have evolved. Like there's really engaging, exciting board games out there. There's so many. Cogs Toys and Games do amazing board games that you can have a look at before you go. Bring some of those that are easy to bring with you. It's a great way of structuring turn-taking, reciprocity, shared engagement, a little bit of challenge, because kids this age will really respond to challenge-based play. But challenge that's collaborative, where they're working together as a team, versus competitive, where they become combative against each other.
So the two boys on the team, maybe against the parents.
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly that.
Am I sensing in this, because you mentioned playing the video games and then you're suggesting board games, are you in your professional role of a view that computer time, game playing needs to be limited?
That's a whole other segment.
I know. But top line.
I mean, yeah, I do. And I think it's interesting when we talk about how we use reducing screen time or gaming as a consequence for bad behavior. Because actually, maybe we shouldn't use it as a consequence, but maybe we should suggest it to incentivize the type of behavior we want to see. Yeah. So it's not that we're punishing kids with reducing gaming, but we're actually saying to them, I want more time with you. Yeah. I'd like to spend more time playing and chatting. So we're going to do less time on this.
Right.
I think you can reframe how we look at it. And I'm not saying get rid of gaming and all of that completely, especially if they're really into it, but look at what they're playing. Look at how much they're playing, and then try to track, are the tensions between them higher around playing gaming? Like, is there a correlation here rather than causation? And if you're saying, well, yes, actually, that's what they fight most about, then that's probably not working the way it's structured. So look at restructuring it, but do that with them, not to them, because if they feel they're being consequenced, then you're going to get a defensive response, which is understandable.
Yeah, because you're giving out to them as opposed to suggesting something new. Isn't it funny, though, in a way, even this query, like the last one, it's the opposite in the sense that we're now on summer holidays. These things are coming to light because the ebb and flow of the normal working weeks and seasons are out of whack. So I guess a lot of this stuff comes to the surface in the summer holidays.
It does, because of the lack of structure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, kids don't say ever to you, thanks so much for those boundaries, I really do well with them. But they do well with them.
Yeah.
And when you have to get up and out and a big portion of your day is in school, and then you're probably engaged in a variety of activities after school or sports, you know, you've less time around each other, where the energy is up and down and it's not at that optimum level of arousal for either of them.
Yeah.
That's where the tensions come in. So summertime is like ripe for that.
Fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Now, this is also fascinating because I imagine this is very common. This is about pocket money. Are you a fan of pocket money in principle, by the way?
Okay, once it's structured, but
Structure seems to be the key of everything.
I'm a fan of it.
Yeah. 101. Okay. Hi, Joanne and Sean. That's the man who usually hosts this show. I'm Sean by a different name, John. My husband and I disagree on how much we teach our children about money. We have a 10 and 13 year old girl and boy, and I think they should do chores for pocket money. And if they want extra to get something specific or save up, we can give them extra jobs. Just simple things like plants, help wash the car, stack the dishwasher. I'm reading the whole of this because I think it's very interesting. Set the table, fold laundry. Often they take longer or don't do as well as I would, but that isn't really the point.
Yeah.
I stick pretty rigidly to it. So I think it makes them better prepared for life, value their money, able to do simple chores, work as a team in the family. My husband just gives them money when they ask and doesn't really bother with the chores. He thinks I'm making them grow up too fast. What is your advice?
I try not to come down on one side or other of parents who write in, but I have to say, this letter writing parent, I'm coming down on that side, because I do think it's important that children learn about money in a healthy way, you know, and in a proactive way. And these are also 10 and 13. They're well able for what's being asked of them here. Children are actually capable of doing some chores from the age of two. Now, I'm not saying we have them doing the dishwasher or mopping the floors at two, but they can put their jammies under the pillow. They can bring their nappy down to the bin. They can engage in helping activities, to pick up their toys, probably one at a time.
That should start as early as possible.
As early as possible, because then what you're doing is you're not introducing something new when they're 13 and they're engaged in that pre-adolescent resistance with you. You're actually just extending what's already been there. Then I do think part of being in a family, John, is that everybody helps out. That's part of being an active member of a family. And I don't think you should be paid for every chore that you do. I think then you can link pocket money, because you're teaching value of money and that money is earned, that you can link that to the over and above. You could have a set two chores that they do as part of being in the family, and you could have a list of optional extra chores that they can choose to do to earn money. And that comes down to, especially because you have a 13-year-old, this is going to become so important for you, that as parents, you'll provide what your child needs. But if there are things that they want, they have to at least contribute to that themselves, which is about earning and saving money. Delayed gratification, that they have to wait for things. It's not just I want, I get, because otherwise you're into a whole conversation about entitlement that brings up. So they should have chores. I think be very realistic when you're linking money to chores and what you expect that pocket money to cover. Like, are you paying a level that you then want your 13-year-old to buy their own toiletries? Then the money has to match that.
Yeah.
If it's smaller money, then you're saying, look, we'll take care of all those other things, but this is for you to have extra money for hanging out with your friends or whatever it might be. So you just make a judgment call that way in terms of what it is. I think it is a good way of teaching fiscal responsibility and educating them. However, in this letter, it's not just about whether these kids should have chores and money. It's, are these parents parenting on the same page, and the importance of getting on the same page? And when I read about, you know, in the longer letter that the dad is doing a different thing to the parent writing into us because he grew up in a really strict, rigid household and he doesn't want that. It also shows how the legacy of how we were parented influences how we now parent. So I think it is about parents having a conversation with each other about this.
And is he mistaking, you know, I want these kids to know I love them, so they get any money they want.
I grew up where there was large demands and expectations on me. I won't do that to my kids. But the answer isn't to go to the no demands, no expectations. It's to make them reasonable and developmentally matched. But 10 and 13 are well able to think about helping out at home, to think about money and where it comes from, and to understand these things. What you don't want is that they understand, if I ask mum for this money, she's going to make me empty the dishwasher. If I ask dad for this money, he's just going to give it to me, because then you're engaging in splitting, and that's going to bring up a whole other set of family challenge than what you're dealing with right now. Get on the same page.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that. But pocket money, you're a big proponent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just finally, there's a text in, oh, that poor 5-year-old with poo issues. Yeah. We had the same with a 7-year-old. He had constipation issues for the past 4 years.
So hard.
We use Movacol pediatric medication, and it is not a laxative, and it's very safe. Our GP says it softens the poo and will stop constipation, and we use it every morning. So Movacol, and we have no vested interest in promoting any drugs, but this is just from a listener who thinks that might help. I guess it probably can't do any harm.
It's probably the most commonly prescribed one at that for children that age with that issue. Yeah.
Well, listen, Joanna, I know you get through more queries, but I delayed you because I was so invested in the ones we were talking about. I was asking for a friend for most of those at this day, but I was very interested. Joanna Fortune, thank you very much.
Thanks so much
for coming into studio.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.